Okay, so we're continuing on our discussions on the Goswamis. Today is the second last session. And we've covered tattva, the truths that each one of us needs to grasp in order to enter into deeper experiences in Krishna consciousness. We talked about sadhachara, good behavior, the ideal way to live, and how to carry ourselves in this world. Yesterday, Ian Prabhu gave a wonderful class on Seva. Was it amazing? So he gave this wonderful class on Seva. I just sprung it on him last minute. I said, do it. It's a Seva. And today we'll be doing a very, very beautiful topic called Tirtha. Mahaprabhu told the Goswamis, look at Tirtha Udara Ad. Excavate the holy places. And what does that really mean? We'll try to explore a little bit today. Before we do that, I'm just going to do a quick experiment with all of you. Sumedh, since you're right in front of me, can you just come here? And each one of you just find a partner next to you. And what I want you to do, we're just going to do something called thumbing. I'm sure you will know about this. So you go like this with your partner. Okay? You can do it. Thumbing, it's called thumbing. Just get your partner's height like this, everyone. Find someone. You can do it in threes also, no problem. And just look at me quickly. It's very, very simple thumbing. It's just that you get 1 minute, and the idea is you pin the person. Just pin that. Yeah? Okay, so you've got 1 minute. And the goal of the game is to listen to me, otherwise it's great. It's very simple. 1 minute, do this. That's a pin. And the goal of the game is to pin your partner as many times as possible. 3, 2, 1, go. That was the best part about the morning. That's me. Okay, so Harsh, I saw you having quite an aggressive fight there. Yeah, well, how much? What was the score?
2-1 to you.
2-1, yeah, Raj. Amazing. 2 Imperial. Ladies there at the back. What was the score?
I think it was
18,
yeah.
What was that? 1-1. Anyone here?
3-0.
3-0. Showing was quite enthusiastic. Can you help? Naveen? You lost count. Did you notice what just happened? Did anyone notice anything interesting there? Wind is draw. I thought there was a game show on TV. No, not quite. Okay, rewind. What did I say the goal of the game was? Right. So, how should I ping with who?
Raj.
So you pinged him 2 times, yeah. And he pinged you 1 time. Yeah. Could you have pinged him more times?
If there was more time.
If there was more time? Yeah. What about in the same amount of time? Could you ping him more times? Say you were not better and you didn't have more time. Could you have pinned him more times? If you work together, how can you make such an outrageous claim of working together? This movement doesn't go on by working together. Did I say the goal of the game was to have a competition? Did I specifically didn't say it was thumb wrestling. I said it was thumbing. I made that up, by the way. Did I tell you it was a competition? Did I tell you to beat the other person? Did I tell you to annihilate them 3-0? But every everyone competed. Everyone tried to beat the other person. Everyone wanted to be top. It's interesting that the world wires us in such a way so that we begin to think in certain ways in situations even when we haven't been told to act that way. That's just the energy of the world we're living in. It's full of competition. It's full of envy. It's full of trying to be the winner at the cost of someone else. The material world is full of selfishness. It's not a reflection on you. I'm just making a point here. And because this world is so much like this, no one actually feels comfortable in this world. No one feels happy. Have you noticed how even in a devotee community, the competition, the envy, the desire to be better than someone else, the desire to be the center of attention for selfish gain is so great. And if we were to say the one difference between the spiritual world and the material world is that the material world is based on selfishness, whereas the spiritual world is based on selflessness.
And so, until and unless
because the world is so surcharged with these material qualities of competition, envy, selfishness, comparison, it becomes a very, very stressful place. Now, in the spirit of family fortunes, we interviewed 100 people. We really did. And we asked them the question, what do you do to relax? What do you think the top 4 answers were?
Sleep.
Yes. Have a pint of Chaitanya. Watch TV.
Vacation.
Thank you. I've got to think of a new interactive exercise. I've done this way too many times. It's good. It's very insightful. The top 4 ways in which people relax. Yeah, this is studies. They go on holiday, they watch a TV or a movie, they take intoxication, or they go to sleep. It's not difficult. You can see what the common denominator there is, which is each one of them are an attempt to escape reality. We have a sense within us that we need to escape to a different space. This space that we're currently living in at the moment will not actually bring us the peace and happiness and sense of experience that we're looking for, and therefore we're always trying to escape. C.S. Lewis, famous quote, "If I find within myself desires which no experience of this world can fulfill, I must conclude I was made for another world." We have this kind of innate sense of trying to move into a different space, trying to kind of get out of our normal situation. But as they say, you can run, but you can't hide. If you go on holiday, you have to come back. If you watch a TV or a movie, it ends. If you take intoxication, you have to come down. And if you go to sleep, you have to again wake up and face the music. No material means to escape the chaos of this world ultimately brings us any sense of fulfillment, any sense of long-term solution. And that indicates to us that we need to move into a completely different space. Not a space in this material world, but a space beyond this material world. A space in which we can fulfill the desires that's deep within us. And that space is the spiritual world. However, How do we connect with the spiritual world? We are here in the material world, and the spiritual world is very, very far. The spiritual world is beyond our grasp. The spiritual world seems like a distant reality. However, Krishna has given one great opportunity for each one of us, that there is a connection point, there is a bridge, there is a portal, there is a gateway to the spiritual world. And that gateway or portal to the spiritual world is a tirtha. That's basically what a tirtha is. People think tirtha means a holy place, and that's true. But the etymological meaning of the word tirtha is a bridge. A bridge which carries you to another world. A bridge which carries you to another reality. A tirtha is an entrance into eternity. And a tirtha is a place where tattva, sadachar, and seva, the points that we've been talking about in the last three sessions, a tirtha is a place where these things are happening naturally, spontaneously, from the heart, without any sense of effort. These principles of experiencing rasa are so intertwined in the life or in the life situation of a tirtha that it becomes a very conducive place to enter into another space of consciousness. And so, the Goswamis were told by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to look the Tirtha Udara Ard, excavate the bridges, excavate the holy places, excavate these gateways into eternity. And so that was very much what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu wanted to do. If you drive up and down the motorways of England, then sometimes you'll see these Gauranga stickers. Anyone seen? You know the devotees who illegally did this and often got caught by the police doing it, because they wanted everyone on the motorway to see the name of Gauranga so that they'll get the benefit. Just by seeing the name of Gauranga, so many sins are annihilated. So one time the devotees were on the street once and they were distributing books, and at the end, after distributing the book, the devotee said to the person, "Can you say Gauranga and be happy?" He said, "Gauranga, yeah, Gauranga. I know Gauranga. I know. I've seen that before. Gauranga." The devotee said, "Yeah, you know Gauranga?" He said, "Yeah, I know Gauranga. That's that company that makes the motorway bridges." So it was interesting because he was actually making a very significant point. This is real bridge preaching. Gauranga actually makes a bridge. Gauranga does make a bridge. Gauranga comes to this world, and what does Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu do? At one point, he goes to Vrindavan. He goes to Vrindavan for 2 months, and he goes all around different places, and he discovers where Krishna performed all of his pastimes many thousands of years ago. And then when he leaves Vrindavan, then he meets the Goswami and he tells them, "Now you go back to Vrindavan and you establish Vrindavan as a holy place that everyone can go to in order to experience what the spiritual world is like and in order to make your journey to the spiritual world." So this is, anyway, this is other slides, Gauranga buses, Gauranga bridges, and even Gauranga in Grand Theft Auto. When you run over the Hare Krishnas, then the more comes up. One good reason to run over some Hare Krishnas. So what are these tirthas? We are all trying to make our way to Goloka Vrindavan. We're all trying to go back to the spiritual world, back to our eternal home. And the bridges or the tirthas are not just one. There's not just one type of tirtha. There are different types of tirtha. The first type of tirtha is the earthly tirtha, known as Bhoma Vrindavan. You can go today to Vrindavan and enter that realm. That is said to be the spiritual world. Krishna's very own abode, which has descended into this realm and is accessible to us if we make the effort and have the desire and get the blessing so that we can go there. There is an earthly Tirtha which is said to be a counterpart of the spiritual reality. However, there is also an envisioned Tirtha. The holy Dham, Vrindavan in India, is definitely a Tirtha. But it's said that when a pure devotee travels and comes to a place, because the pure devotee is always living in Vrindavan, by their vision, they can turn any place into Vrindavan. So when a pure devotee comes to a place and they invite Krishna and then they build a community centered around worship to Krishna, then that place becomes a Tirtha just like Vrindavan. Therefore, Srila Prabhupada traveled all across the world and he created so many Tirthas, isn't it? New Vrindavan, new Mayapur, new Panihati, new Jagannath Puri, new Gokul, all of these places are actually non-different from the Holy Dham because they're envisioned by the vision and potency and purity of the Holy Body. It becomes the Holy Dham. And there is one more type of Tirtha. Does anyone know? There is the earthly Tirtha, there is the envisioned Tirtha, which is created by a pure devotee, and there's also another type of Tirtha. Does anyone know what that type of Tirtha could be? Yes. It's the individual Tirtha. Yudhisthira, when Vidura is traveling in the Bhagavatam, he leaves the palace of Hastinapura because he's insulted and then he comes back. Then as soon as he's gone on pilgrimage and he comes back to the palace, then Yudhisthira says to him, Bhavadvina Bhagavatas Tirtha Bhuta Swayam Vibhu Tirthani Kurvanti Tirtha Tirthani Svantasena Gada Vrita. He says, Vidura, you are like a walking place of pilgrimage. You are a Tirtha in and of yourself because all of these things, Seva, Sadachar, the truths of the Lord, Rasa, all of these things are happening within you. And therefore, you are a Tirtha, you are a walking place of pilgrimage. And just by being in your vicinity, it's like being in the Dham. And so, these are the three types of Tirthas that ultimately lead you back to the spiritual world. And one who therefore wants to advance in spiritual life, is said that it's very important that they take advantage of these Tirthas. So what did the Goswamis do? They went to Vrindavan and they excavated the earthly Vrindavan. They found all of the places where Krishna performed his pastimes and they made it available. They popularized it. And they made a path for people to enter into Vrindavan. Not just that, but the Goswamis also created their own Vrindavan. Before the Goswamis met Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, they were living in a place called Ramakeli. And in Ramakeli, they had created a Radha Kund. They had created a Govardhan Hill. They had created something called a Gupta Vrindavan, a hidden Vrindavan, an envisioned Vrindavan, even before they met Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and came to Vrindavan. They planted a Kadamba tree, and from that Kadamba tree, many other trees came about, and Vrindavan was created there in Ramakeli. So they also gave access to an envisioned Tirtha. And the Goswamis themselves were walking Tirthas, because they carried Krishna within their hearts. And because they were constantly worshipping the Lord and meditating on the Lord, in their presence, wherever they were, anyone felt that they were in a Tirtha. So the Goswamis are very much giving access to the spiritual world through these Tirthas. But specifically, what Mahaprabhu told them to do, look at their Tukudana Ara, specifically go to the earthly Vrindavan. And give the whole world access to Vrindavan. So the earthly Vrindavan is a very, very special place. Many of you may have been. It's a very special place because Many, many people come there wanting to enter into eternity. You may have seen, for example, personalities like this who dedicate themselves doing Dandavat Parikrama. Once there was one individual who was doing Dandavat Parikrama like this and went up to him and said, how did you end up deciding to do this? Yeah, everyone knows the concept. They do Dandavat, they have a stone, they move it as far as they go, and like that they go down 108 times, move 108 stones, and then walk forward that much, and then do the same thing again. And like this, go all the way around Vrindavan, all the way around Govardhan for the rest of their life, bowing down to the Lord. So one time I asked this person who was doing Dandavat Parikrama, how did you end up making a vow like this? How did you end up deciding to do this? And you know what he said? He said, I opened the Bhagavad Gita and I looked at the most important verse of the Gita where Krishna says, engage your mind in always thinking of me, become my devotee, offer obeisances to me and worship me, being completely absorbed in me, surely you will come to me. So he was reading this verse. And he said, this is it. This is the essence of the Gita. This is what I need to do with my life. And he said, I looked at the verse and I thought, become a devotee of Krishna? I'm so full and I've got so many material desires. How will I ever become a devotee of Krishna? Always think of Krishna? I'm always thinking of so many things. I'll never be able to always think of Krishna. Worship Krishna? I can't even concentrate when I do arati. My attention goes everywhere. He said, and then I saw in the Sanskrit, Mam Namaskuru, offer obeisances to me. And I thought, that I can do. The other things I can't do, but that I can do. I can offer obeisances to Krishna. So he said, when I read that, I just decided that maybe that's then what I should just do for the rest of my life. So he packed everything up, and he came to Vrindavan, and he decided for the rest of his life that he would just offer obeisances to Krishna. Who can do such a thing? This is Vrindavan. Such people come. And therefore Vrindavan is a very, very special place. Because yes, there are holy places, but there are also very, very holy people, holy personalities, who can give you insight, inspiration, and instruction as to how to develop a deeper level of connection in Krishna consciousness. So Vrindavan is very, very special. Vrindavan is known as the land of the cows. Krishna is known as Govinda, the one who gives pleasure to the cows. He's known as Gopala, the one who protects the cows. The place where he lives is Gokul. And therefore there are many, many cows. And beautiful deity worship. We heard about yesterday the deities of Vrindavan. Giving us a glimpse of what it means to enter into Krishna's world. Great devotion, simplicity. What we read about in thousands of pages of books and what we hear about in thousands of hours of lectures, if you just take a casual stroll through the streets of Vrindavan, you can see it manifest in the lives of the devotees there. So somehow the very, very complex spiritual life, the very, very complex philosophy of Krishna consciousness starts to become very, very simple because you see someone doing it so naturally, effortlessly, so spontaneously in the way they function in day-to-day life. And so Srila Prabhupada wanted the devotees to go to Vrindavan, do parikrama of Vrindavan. So we've all been fortunate to, many of us, go to Vrindavan. Try to go every year to Vrindavan. Dylan came with me once to Vrindavan. That was an experience. We came to Vrindavan and I said, Dylan, we're in Vrindavan. It's time to be simple. It's time to focus on Krishna. Reduce, you know, all of these things. You know, the Goswamis were just eating fruits and roots. And he looks at me and goes, "You eat fruits and roots, I eat dosas and samosas." So sure enough, he was in MVT every day, dosas and samosas. Raheem, I'm sure he made a lot of advancement. I went on Govind and Paritram with him, and I left him behind because I'm a faster walker. And 1 hour later, he appeared in the distance, and he looked about like 30 years older. He was limping. It's almost like his beard grew. And I said, "My God, Dylan, so, you made so much advancement in one Govind and Paritram. You look like a Babaji, you know?" That's like, and then he came onto the rickshaw, we were going back, and he looked at his eye watch and he said, "I burned so many calories." But if you keep Krishna in the center, everything else works out. So yes, you should go to Vrindavan. They say some people go, most of us will go to Vrindavan for inspiration. And some people go to Vrindavan to spend their final days. And others will go to Vrindavan because they have some specific service there. Srila Prabhupada wanted us to know that Vrindavan is our home. We cannot just establish a relationship with Krishna. We must establish a relationship with Krishna's holy places, and specifically Vrindavan, because that's Krishna's playground, that's the playground of God. Therefore, when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was coming to this world, he was teaching that we're not just worshipping Krishna. We are worshipping Aradhyo Bhagavan Vrajesha Panayas, the Dhamma Vrindavan, and we're worshipping Krishna, but specifically Krishna who lives in Vrindavan. Because there is a very, very specific type of consciousness in Vrindavan that somehow we have to try to grasp. And so Jiva Goswami makes this point. He says that ultimately Vrindavan is a state of consciousness. But hang on, you said it's a place. You said it's an envisioned community. You said it resides within a person. But yes, ultimately all of these places, you enter them, but the idea is that you internalize that consciousness. And if you are able to internalize that consciousness, then wherever you are, ultimately you're living in Vrindavan. And so, this is the main point I wanted to share with you today. That Vrindavan is basically, the Tirtha is a bridge. It's a bridge to the eternity. It's a bridge to the spiritual world. It's a bridge to Krishna's playground. But ultimately, it's a place, a bridge, which is taking you into a different space of consciousness. If you notice, this week, we've been very much talking about Krishna consciousness. In the beginning sessions, I talked about Krishna consciousness as the highest theology, as the highest revelation of religion. Later on in the week, we've been talking about how Krishna consciousness is the most perfect science. It's the highest dimensional science. It's completely factual. However, in Vrindavan, Krishna consciousness as a religion, Krishna consciousness as a science, all of that stuff pales into insignificance. In Vrindavan, Krishna consciousness is not a religion. In Vrindavan, Krishna consciousness is not a science. In Vrindavan, Krishna consciousness is life. And Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu wanted the Goswamis to excavate Vrindavan and wanted people to go to Vrindavan so that they begin to enter into the most natural practice of spiritual life, which goes beyond all of these things. In our stage of Krishna consciousness, we need philosophy, we need understanding, we need argument, we need different discussions and debates in order to bolster our faith. But in Vrindavan, philosophy goes into the background, and it's all about personality. It's all about relationship. It's all about Krishna. Just like some people from Menza had come to speak to Prabhupada. So they were going back and forth with all of these debates, and and then they brought up the problem of rocks. You know that one, right? The problem of rocks. Can God create a rock that's so heavy that he can't lift it. So what are you going to say? Yes, he can, but then there's something God can't lift. You say, no, God can lift everything, but then there's something God can't create. So they came out with this really smart argument, the problem of rocks. So, Swamiji, can God create a rock so heavy that he can't lift it? And what did Prabhupada say? Yes. And then he can lift it. And in that moment, it was annihilated. It was an end of argument, end of conversation. Prabhupada just opened up a whole other concept of God. Anyway, like this, they were discussing back and forth, and then finally when they left, Prabhupada looked at the devotee and he said, so many arguments, so many discussions, so much back and forth. Why don't they just take Krishna? Krishna is so nice. Krishna is so nice. Why don't they just take Krishna? And so the devotees in that moment realized that Prabhupada was doing all of this philosophizing to bring people to the point of just understanding that Krishna is not nice. He just took it. In our stage of Krishna consciousness, philosophy is important, but in Vrindavan consciousness, no one cares for it. Krishna is just so nice. Krishna is beautiful. In our stage of Krishna consciousness, we have to support it with rules and regulations, vaidhi, isn't it? It was a challenge to get up this morning. Right? It was you had to kind of control the mind, because we're not having a spontaneous surge of running towards Mangalarati so that we can see Krishna or Gauranitya. But in Vrindavan, things are moving on attachment and spontaneity. Can you begin to see how in Vrindavan, Krishna consciousness doesn't look like a religion anymore? It's not a science. Something very, very different. In our stage, we're worshipping Krishna because he's God. In Vrindavan consciousness, they're worshipping God because he's Krishna. They don't look at Krishna as God. They're just charmed by Krishna's personality, by his qualities. If you go to Vrindavan today, there's a place called Kaita. And in this place, what happened, Krishna was performing the rasa dance, and then Krishna somehow, as he does, he disappeared. And as he disappeared, the gopis were plunged into a separation from him, so they began running everywhere to find, where is Krishna, where is Krishna? So they came to this place, Paita. And in this place, Krishna had come, but what he had done is he had transformed himself into four-armed Narayan. So it was Krishna, but now he was looking like four-armed Narayan. So there he was in Paita, and the gopis came searching for Krishna. Where is Krishna? Where is Krishna? And then in the distance they saw Narayan, Vishnu. They ran up. Oh, please accept our humble obeisances. They bowed down. Vishnu, Narayan, Om Namo, Narayana. And then they looked at Narayan and they said, can you tell us where Krishna is? So it's interesting, at that moment, Krishna saw that they were not interested just in the awe and reverential aspect. Oh yes, we worship God. Of course we worship God. But we're just interested in Krishna. And then of course Radharani came. And then Radharani asked Krishna, who was Narayan, can you tell me where is Krishna? And she said it with such love, such desperation, such longing, such a deep sentiment of devotion that Krishna was unable to maintain his form, his four-armed form, and Krishna just transformed into the original source. Oh, there you are. That is Vrindavan. It's not so much that, oh, Krishna, and now so much reverence. No, Krishna is just amazing. In our stage of Krishna consciousness, we talk about how Krishna enters our life. And when I was 16, I met the devotees and Krishna consciousness came into my life. But in Vrindavan, we enter into Krishna's life. So Krishna says, Machita, Matika Tatarana, Bodhayana, Parashvaram. We Krishna says, the thoughts of my pure devotees dwell in me, their lives enter into me. Once I was a book distribution in Loughborough, and this old Indian man was half my height. He came up to me. I could see he was a bit angry. So he came right up close to me. So he was like this. I was just waiting to see what he would say. And obviously he knew I was distributing books, and he just looked at me and goes, "Why don't you just get a life?" I wasn't expecting that. So I kind of looked down at him like this and I said, "Actually, I'm trying to give up my life and enter Krishna's life. I'm not trying to get a life." So you know, it's such an amazing thing to enter into Krishna's life. Everything we heard yesterday about the aartis and how the aartis in the temple are basically giving you that sense of entering into Krishna's world. It's no longer that I have my agenda in life and then I fit Krishna in at certain times, but everything happens around Krishna's life. This is very, very beautiful. In our stage, we're serving a need. What is the need? What does the Krishna consciousness movement need? Oh, there's someone who's not doing that? Okay, then I'll do that. Okay, this is required for the movement? Okay, I'll do that. But in Vrindavan consciousness, it's not that we're serving the need. I need to serve. There's no purpose to life unless you have service. Therefore, in Vrindavan, they're sweeping even when there's no dust. Because they want to serve. In our stage, I am Krishna's. Yes, Krishna, I surrender myself to you. I fully give my mind, body, soul to you. But in Vrindavan, Rupa Goswami says, Mamata. The mood is not that I give myself to Krishna, the mood is Krishna is mine. Going to Vrajavasi's house and asking, what is that? Oh, that's Krishna's kitchen, that's Krishna's living room, that's Krishna's bed, that's Krishna's temple. And who's that? Krishna? Oh, that's my Krishna. Everything is Krishna's. Everything is Krishna's. But Krishna is mine. That has been that in consciousness. So the Goswamis, what they came to teach, they gave philosophy. They gave theology. They gave all the arguments. They gave the spiritual science. But they also gave Vrindavan. Because what they were also giving us is the opportunity to go beyond all of this and actually have a real, meaningful, heartfelt, natural, spontaneous, loving relationship with Krishna. And if we do everything, but we don't come to that point, then we miss the whole point. So this is what the Goswamis were doing. Radha Kunda Tate Kalinda Talaya Dire Javamshi Vade. Sometimes they're on the bank of Radha Kunda, sometimes on the shores of the Yamuna, and sometimes at Vamshi Vat. At these places they appear just like madmen, in the full ecstasy of love for Krishna. Hey God, hey Vrajadevike Chalalite, hey Nanda Suno Kuta. Krishna, where are you? Are you at Govardhan? Where are you? Are you at the Yamuna? Running around in madness, crying for Krishna in desperation. The Goswamis taught us how we can enter into Vrindavan. You don't enter into Vrindavan because you know the philosophy. You don't enter into Vrindavan because you followed all the rules and regulations for your whole life. You don't enter into Vrindavan because you've been a good devotee and you've come to all the programs. You enter Vrindavan because you're desperate for Krishna. You enter Vrindavan because you're crying for Krishna. You enter Vrindavan because everything else in life has become insignificant. And all that's on your mind is somehow or other I want to be with Krishna. So therefore, Gopavinda Maharaj used to say, we're not opening temples, we're opening crying houses. where people can come and learn the art of how to cry for Krishna. Because you know what? If you don't cry for Krishna, you'll cry for all the material things of this world. You'll cry because of a relationship. You'll cry because your material situation didn't work out as you wanted it to work out. You'll cry because you didn't get what you planned for. If we don't cry for Krishna, we'll cry for the things of this world. And therefore, the Goswami is what? Not only teaching us a philosophy, but a very deep mood of desperation. And they were teaching us that we have to develop a sense of desperation and a mood of separation in our practice of spiritual life. It has to become more intense than just a religion. Rupa Goswami is explaining that in Radha and Krishna's pastimes there are different types of separation. Purva Rag is a little technical but it's still relevant to our discussion. Purva Rag means the separation that Krishna and Radharani feel before they come together when they're about to meet but they haven't quite met together. So they're feeling separation, it's almost a separation in anticipation that we will meet. But we haven't met yet, and therefore I'm separated. But there's anticipation. Then there is a type of separation whereby Krishna and Radharani are together, but they have an argument, they have an altercation, they have a difference of opinion. And then Radharani manifests her transcendental pride and argues with Krishna. And therefore, although they're together, because they're transcendentally arguing, there's a sense of separation. Then there's another type of separation which is called prema vaichitya. This means Krishna and Radharani are together. They're not necessarily arguing. Everything's fine. Everything's perfect. Everything's wonderful. Everything's a bed of roses. But Radharani's thinking in her mind, at one point, Krishna is going to leave. And the thought that Krishna will at some point leave means she begins to feel the separation even before Krishna has left because she's anticipating that Krishna will leave. And then there's a type of separation called pravas, which means when actually, by time and place, Krishna and Radharani are actually separated. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he explains that we have to develop a mood of separation, a mood of desperation in our spiritual life. But which one do we develop? These three seem very much beyond our capacity because we're not with Krishna. So how can we experience man? How can we experience prema vaichitya? How can we experience being with Krishna and being separated? Because we're not with Krishna in the first place. So he says we have to try to develop this first type of separation, purva rag, the anticipation that I will meet Krishna. And when we chant, when we do our devotional activities, with that anticipation in mind, feeling the separation, that I'm not with Krishna, but I will, I want to, then that kind of desperation in one's spiritual practice brings one to Krishna, brings one to Vrindavan. But one may say, how do I develop that anticipation? How do I develop that sense of wanting to run to Krishna? How do I develop that desperation to cry for Krishna? So Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, therefore one must hear about Vrindavan. One must hear about Krishna's love between that he exchanges with his devotees. And by that constant hearing of Krishna Katha, hearing of Krishna's pastimes, even when sometimes we read it and we feel, I can't connect to it, I don't feel the emotions, it doesn't touch my heart. Still, by continuing in the reading, then gradually the heart becomes softened and we develop that desperation to want to enter into that type of bhakti. And so, if we give a whole seminar on the Goswamis, but we don't talk about this very heartfelt, this very deep aspect of learning how to cry for Krishna, then we don't actually give what the Goswamis came to give. Because I've said it, and I say it again, the Goswamis didn't come to give a religion, a theology, a science, a set of philosophical things. They only gave all of those things so that you can enter into a very spontaneous relationship of love with Krishna. I'm just going to play a clip. Brace yourself. This is His Holiness Guru Govinda Maharaj speaking. He speaks very, very strongly. But the message is very, very beautiful. Try to absorb the mood of what he's saying. And very much the bhava of desperation for Krishna. Teaching of the Goswamis, as Maharaj said, not crocodile tears. It's Sometimes we may cry in front of Krishna, but it's very much an emotional thing. I got this problem and that difficulty, and why is Krishna doing so much challenges in my life? But we're here talking about a different type of crying. This is called Atma Krandan, the cry of the heart, the cry of the soul, the cry from deep within. That one must come to that point of saying that I have no more agendas or things I'm trying to achieve in this world. I'm here, I do my duties, I do whatever is required. But my North Star, my goal, my aspiration, what's really capturing my imagination is something way beyond all of this. And when that aspiration becomes so big, so intense, it becomes such a desperation that it consumes one's mind, then one can begin to cry for Krishna. Not the emotional crying of the material world, but a deep, heartfelt crying of the soul. And so the Goswamis were very much teaching this through their own example and through their literature, and through their guidance, that this is the goal of life, that Krishna says, sarva dharman parityaja, give up religion. We're not here to practice a religion. We're not here to practice a spiritual science. We're not here to practice a philosophy or theology. We're here to practice the most natural thing in the world, which is to have a loving relationship with Krishna, which is based on genuine emotions and sentiments. And the Tirtha is a place which acts as a bridge to that, which sometimes may seem very, very far, which sometimes may seem way beyond our level. But by going to the Tirtha, whether it be the earthly Tirtha, whether it be the envisioned Tirtha, or whether it be by associating very closely with someone who carries that spirit, by being in those tirthas, one begins to develop the bhav, the emotion, the consciousness of Vrindavan. And in that way, one can steal some of it and capture it within their own hearts so that they can also enter into Vrindavan themselves. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama. So I don't know the time. We have some time for questions. So then if anyone has any questions or any comments or any points they would like to raise on this subject of Tirtha, connecting with Krishna, I appreciate it. Yes.
Thank you, Sandra. My question is, earlier you spoke about internalizing our consciousness.
Consciousness is internal, so so really how to bring that very natural Krishna consciousness about, that's what you're asking, and how to. So that is the process, like we said, like hearing about the devotees. You see, Gopal Chandra Jiva Goswami says, I heard many things about Krishna, but my heart never melted. But when I heard about how the devotees love Krishna and how Krishna loves them back, then my heart melted. So one very, very powerful thing is to hear about the exchanges between Krishna and his devotees, to hear about the great Vaishnavas, whether they be Krishna's associates, whether they be the acharyas, because by hearing how they live their life, what kind of consciousness they live with, then we begin to get hints of how does a pure devotee register reality, through what lens are they looking at life, and then it gives us an insight into how we can begin looking at life. So I guess there could be many, the whole process of sadhana will ultimately change that consciousness and bring that about, but just on a very practical level, by hearing how, like, why is Prabhupada's biographies, why are they so valuable? because they're a living theology. They show us how someone who was actually a living Bhagavatam walked and functioned in the world. And it gives us an insight of how we can actually similarly do the same and internalize that Krishna consciousness. So. Thakur says, Sri Gauda Mandala Bhumi Seja Ve Chintamani. That Gauda Mandal, Mayapur, Vrindavan, none different. So, we were talking about this yesterday, that someone was once asked, what's your favorite, Vrindavan, Jagannath Puri, or Mayapur? And all of them are amazing. Vrindavan is Madhurya Dham, the place of sweetness. Mayapur is Audarya Dham, the place of magnanimity. And Jagannath Puri is Viraha Kshetra, the place of deep separation where Mahaprabhu went into Radha Bhav. So these are all amazing places, and according to one's individuality, where do they connect? But still, Vrindavan, the Goswamis revealed Vrindavan, because it said, just as Krishna is the source of all incarnations, Vrindavan is the source of all dhams. So you get the benefit of visiting all dhams by going to my Vrindavan. But ultimately, yeah. But just on that point, I'll say one more thing, that Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains that in Kali Yuga, Vrindavan will become more and more covered, whereas Mayapur dham will become more and more accessible to everyone. So in that sense, for us to access Mayapur may be easier. Krishna is a very high thing. So we can cry that we can't cry for Krishna. That is a very nice thing. That's not crocodile tears, because those are tears which are leading you towards a pure aspiration. That is a very, very practical way to pursue that aspiration. And the real point that's being made by the Goswamis is that in our spiritual practice, we have to add the element of bhava. We have to add the element of emotion. Because if we don't, it's like firing a gun with blanks. We make a lot of noise, but nothing actually really happens. So it's not just by sound, it's not just by doing, it's not just by chanting really, really loudly, as we did the other night. That was loud. Loud chanting is also nice, but there has to be some, you know. Gaur Kishore Das Babaji said, a woman cannot give labor, cannot give birth to a child simply by imitating the labor pains of a pregnant woman. It kind of just like, there has to be something inside, right? Nothing's coming out, right? So, in the same way, yes, we must bring some bhava. You see, if we don't do this, Krishna consciousness will become dry at one point. Because there's only so long you can continue Krishna consciousness on the basis of determination, on the basis of duty. But when you begin introducing some genuine emotion into the equation, then that's ultimately Krishna's bhava rahi janadhanani. That's what he wants. So then he becomes more present. And when you contact Krishna, then you become inspired, because you feel and experience. So spiritual life becomes very interesting. So yes, cry, then you cannot cry.
So in the way you're talking about purva radha, which is the anticipation that I will meet Krishna, you're saying that we should have this sort of kind of mood, trying to cultivate this mood first, or in our spiritual practice. So I have the kind of like two things. What one thing is, when we sort of think practically, and how that is, like, you know, I will be Krishna, what does that really mean in blissful spiritual experience, the only one I've experienced of Krishna was on a chant or something like that. And can we use that as our sort of motivation for us to sort of like chant and sort of carry on with the process? Is that use that to as a motivation that one day maybe in this life I'll experience Krishna and that's why I want to keep chanting, keep going. Is that kind of like the root?
Yeah, it's interesting because you find both things. Like, say, for example, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, don't try to see God by acting in such a way that God will want to see you. So you have that one statement on one side. And then you have another statement on another side, which is the Goswamis who are saying, hey, Dad, hey, Vajrayan, where are you, Krishna? I want to see you, I want to see you. Even from George Harrison, isn't it? Oh, my sweet, what was it? I really want to see you. So Prabhupada appreciated that. He said that was very good. So when Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur is saying don't try to see God, what he's saying is don't think that you can kick your way into the spiritual world, kick the doors open into the spiritual world by your endeavor. You can open all of the doors to the spiritual world, but the final door is locked from the inside. And only Krishna can unlock that one. So you got to open all the other doors. But then Krishna can only unlock the last one. So in that way, yes, we want to see Krishna. Because naturally, we want to be with Krishna. Because we're Krishna and it is us. And that's a very natural thing. We don't need to also philosophize it. If you had a dream, you really wanted to come to the PS trip. Why? Because your friends are here. Friends in the ashram, I'm sure. So. Naturally, it's a natural thing. You don't need to. So sometimes in Krishna consciousness, sometimes I think also it's like you make a simple thing. Like say for example, japa. What's japa, right? It's a conversation with Krishna, right? So okay. Here we are, we're going to put our hand in the bee bag and have a conversation with Krishna. It's clear, that's what japa is, it's a conversation with Krishna. But then what do? We have a japa seminar. I'm not against japa seminar, it's funny we need to do this. And then we kind of tell everyone, okay, 10 tips in japa. Number one, get enough rest and don't fall asleep. And you kind of think, like, imagine I was going to do like a seminar on like a corporate company on 10 good points to have a conversation with someone. And I put the first point up and it's like, don't go to sleep. You're like, what are you talking about? You come up with something substantial. It's an obvious point. But it's amazing how such an obvious point, we need to be told that. Because what's happened is we've made God a concept rather than a person. And the Goswamis, what they're basically telling us, is go from this idea that God is a concept to the fact that God is a person. And when you start entering into that very obvious or overlooked aspect, it actually becomes very clear. Yes, of course you want to see Krishna. Who would not want to see Krishna? Does that help?
Yeah. Can we anticipate then to experience Krishna in this life? Or is it like, because at the same time you said Krishna opens that last door. So is there also some sort of patience that we need as well?
Like, so that's what I said. Both attitudes are there. The intense greed. Dadra-lo-yam or dimuri-me-galam. You've got to be greedy. But at the same time, utsahan, nishtaya, dhaira, you've got to be patient, you've got to be determined. So we don't have any expectations. In Mahaprabhu's pastimes, was that Mukunda Datta, he was hearing some Mayavad philosophy, so Mahaprabhu chastised him. And then he could not go in when Mahaprabhu was giving darshan. Everyone was petitioning on his behalf, and then one person went in and said, why, Mahaprabhu, why are you not seeing Mukunda? He's such a great devotee, you should see him. Mahaprabhu said, I will not see him for thousands of lifetimes. And when the person came out, Mukunda was very nervous. He said, did you put my petition before? He said, yeah, Mahaprabhu said, but You know, he said that you won't see him for thousands of lifetimes. And Mukunda Dutta started dancing in ecstasy. This person was thinking, I thought I was becoming the deliverer of bad news here. I mean, thousands of lifetimes. Does it take thousands of lifetimes? No, but I will see the Lord. I will see the Lord. So you have to hopefully for thousands of lifetimes. Just kind of want to stop.
I wanted to ask, so you mentioned about the different doors into Dharma, and the last one is locked by Krishna from the inside. Something I've been thinking about is how Prabhupada is like, you know, he said that thing that he was trying to succeed in Mansa, he followed the four regulative principles, and I have the back door key to the spiritual world. So, is there something there that, you know, like, by serving the Prabhupada's movement, Prabhupada personally is allowing us to enter directly to Krishna somehow, or is there still that door that is not for me to have an only Krishna thing?
So is it Prabhupada who can open it up for us? Does it have to be Krishna? In the ninth canto of the Bhagavatam, Krishna says, Aham bhakta paradino yashvam tantra ivadvija. He says, I am not an independent person. My devotees control me. My devotees have conquered me. Sadhavo vidayam mayam. My devotees are in my heart and I am in their heart. So Krishna is controlled by his devotees. Prabhupada said that once, I think, in Kailendra group. The devotees, he said, I have captured Krishna. I have captured Krishna and I brought him here so you can worship him. So the devotees have captured Krishna. Therefore, Bhaktivinoda is singing, Krishna se tomar, Krishna dite paro, tomara shakati ache. He's saying to the Vaishnava, Krishna is yours. You have him. You have the power to give him. Kandiya, kandiya, pranana rakhi goar. Therefore, crying and crying, I'm running behind the Vaishnavas because they have Krishna and they can give Krishna to me. So yeah, like when you go to Vrindavan today, if you go to the Krishna Balaram temple, before you go there, there's a Prabhupada gate. And you can't get to Krishna Balaram temple unless you go through the Prabhupada gate. So it's very nice because it's not just... It relates to our life. So yeah, we must serve Srila Prabhupada. Sometimes people ask me, like, what do you feel like when you go to Vrindavan? And it's funny because you go to Vrindavan, sometimes I go in January and then I come there, and then every morning they have aarti in Prabhupada Samadhi. So you go for the aarti. And it's funny, you arrive in Vrindavan, it's amazing, you're there finally in the Tirthan, Lord's whole, you know, own playground, and but nothing else to do and just hear and chant, it's wonderful. But after about 6 or 7 days, when you go for the aarti, you kind of begin to hear Prabhupada saying, like, okay, when are you going back? When are you going back to serve? When are you going back to preach? I left Vrindavan. I left Vrindavan to give Vrindavan to the whole world. So what are you going to do to help me? And so it's kind of a bit annoying sometimes because you just want to be like peacefully in Vrindavan and just like soak up the spiritual atmosphere, but then you feel the pressure of Prabhupada. When Prabhupada's disappearance day in Vrindavan, they bring out the chala that Prabhupada was wearing when he left this world. And Gopal Krishna Maharaj, he goes around and puts it on everyone's head. And Kadamakana Maharaj, he says, when Gopal Krishna Maharaj puts that chadar on your head, Prabhupada's chadar, then you feel the weight of Prabhupada's expectation. Guru means heavy. Prabhupada was not just heavy with knowledge. Prabhupada was heavy with missionary spirit. Prabhupada was heavy in his expectations of what his disciples would do to help him. And so perhaps you feel the weight that, oh my God, I've got to also do something now. I've got to do something. So if you take the weight of expectation on yourself and do what you can, and by Prabhupada's grace, he says, I've got the back door key. So that's our saving grace. So we enter Vrindavan through service. Once I was in Govardhan, and I didn't have any, I just literally, with the dhoti I was wearing, and a bead bag, I didn't have anything else. I didn't have any money, nothing. So I was doing Govardhan Parikrama. I felt so liberated. It was like, so I was doing Parikrama. And then out of the blue, one Baba came to me. He was living at Govardhan. And so we began speaking, and then he said, just stay here. That's how it comes. What do you mean? You just stay here. That's, you're in Vrindavan. You're in Krishna's own. You're in the Tirtha. You're in the bridge to eternity. Just stay here. You don't have to. That's it. Just disappear from the face of the world. And just stay here. This is perfection. So for a moment, I thought about it. Maybe that's a good idea, you know. Maybe I could just stay here. That was it. What else would there be to do? To do in life? Here I am. But then I thought, well, what qualification do I have? I won't be able to see Vrindavan. I won't be able to see Krishna here. Because I haven't served. I can't buy a ticket to Vrindavan, Prabhupada said. You only reach Vrindavan through service, through sacrifice, and through ultimately feeling that deep desperation to want to be there. So that's the opportunity is there. Thank you so much.